Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the House Energy and Environment Committee. I'm opening the meeting for Thursday, April 16th, 2015. I'm going to go ahead and get started by opening a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 19. Beth, could you provide the committee with a brief summary of the bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJM 19 would urge the Secretary of Energy and Congress to support the siting of the U.S. Department of Energy's Frontier Observatory for Research in Geothermal Energy at the Newberry Geothermal Project. There is no fiscal revenue.
Thank you so much. Welcome, Representative Wisnett. We're glad to have you here. Do you want to tell us a little more about this bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable committee members. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, State Representative, House District 53. Beth read you what the bill's purpose is, or statement is. The purpose of the FORGE, the Frontier Observatory for Research in Geothermal Energy, is to perform advanced research on enhanced geothermal systems for the purpose of developing large-scale, economically sustained heat exchange systems. We're competing with other states for this location for the FORGE. And this memorial does help the effort to locate the FORGE in Oregon. The estimate from the Department of Energy is that they would fund this lab at $30 million per year. In addition, the construction of the lab would employ 310 people, and the lab would employ about 100 permanent jobs in the operational phase. An advantage that Oregon has is that the proposed Oregon site would be located near the private Newberry Geothermal Project, which is already working with the Department of Energy. The joint memorial before you lists all the supporters of siting the lab at the Newberry Geothermal Project, and that those supports include Governor Brown, U.S. Senator Wyden, and Senator Merkley, and other local organizations. You have a copy of the senator's letters on OLIS, and I can provide copies of the other local ones if you need that. Madam Chair, for full disclosure, this siting is in the legislative district that I have the honor of representing. And the Joint Memorial 19 will produce economic benefits and contributing to research in alternate energy sources. I kindly request you vote to pass this memorial to the floor of a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative. Any questions? Representative Boone.
Can you get me a job there?
I'm sure they'll be high paid, Madam Chair. And Representative Boone.
Thank you. Any others? No, thank you so much for your testimony and bringing this forward. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 19 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 19.
Chair Rega Peterson, I move House Joint Memorial 19 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Rep. Johnson moves House Joint Memorial 19 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there further discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? With that, the motion passage and HJM 19 is adopted. And Representative Wisnett, would like to carry it?
Yes, please.
All right, he will be the carrier. Thank you so much. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Joint Memorial 19 and open a work session on House Bill 3329. This was a public hearing that was held just the other day with Senator and Representative Whitsitt here. Mm-hmm. Then there's no amendments to this, is there?
No, there's
okay.
No.
Chair Rega Peterson, I move House Bill 3329 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 3329 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on this bill? Does anybody need a reminder of what the bill is? Representative Colby?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am supportive of the bill. I just had inquired to the agency why they picked 140 degrees originally in the definition, and this is scaling it down to 128. I'm not too concerned in context of this bill, but it was just information I was hoping they would be able to come back with.
Mm-hmm. Do we have anything?
Madam Chair, Representative Holby, I believe the agency did reply, and I'm just looking to see whether or not the reply is on OLIS. But as I recall, what they indicated was that at the time that standard was adopted, that was sort of the temperature for the technology that was available at that time. That was as much as I got out of what they said.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Any? Okay. So seeing none, Is there any objection to this? Okay, so with that, the motion passes, and we will send this to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I will ask Representative Woodsett to be the carrier for this. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3329. And the next one we are going to be working with is open a work session on House Bill 3068, which had to do with wood stoves. This was a public hearing that we had on 324. There is a dash 4 amendment to this, which is posted on OLIS. Okay, and Beth, do you want to give us a description of the amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the dash 4 amendment would replace the original measure. It would direct the Department of Environmental Quality to study and develop recommendations for legislation to reduce wood stove smoke. It identifies the subjects to be evaluated in the study and directs the department to form a work group and specifies that the work group is to include representatives of other state agencies, stakeholders, elected officials, and others with expertise to inform the study and represent both urban and rural communities in different geographic regions of the state. The department is to collaborate with specified agencies, consult with members of the public from urban and rural communities, as well as different regions, and submit an initial report on preliminary findings and recommendations to legislative committee during the 2016 regular session and a final report on or before September 15, 2016. There's no revenue impact, and I believe there was a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. Any discussion on this?
Madam Speaker, I wanted to say it was good to work with the DEQ on the amendments. My concern about moving forward with this was making sure that this work group or this task force would have true representation of those parts of the state that are impacted by wood smoke and the potential not only health impacts but potential detrimental economic impacts. If in fact these airsheds aren't improved, it could be a potential drag on economic activity. So I feel good about it. So again, I thank the DEQ for their work with me on this amendment.
Thank you. Anyone else? I would agree with that. I'm very happy where we ended up with these dash 4 amendments. We've gotten a lot of the things that we've discussed as a committee about the wood stove issue and the air particulate matter issue in terms of both the economic and public health potential impacts of this issue, as well as Representative Polvey's interest in seeing how we could use the wood pellets and using that as a subsidy, which will also be wrapped into this.
Chair Baker-Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 4-16-15.
Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 4-16-15. Is there discussion? You guys have already discussed. Is there further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm probably going to be a no on this just for the simple fact I'm from rural Oregon, and I just don't like the negativity that's focused on simple wood stoves. I understand there's a lot of old ones out there. My grandparents have a ancient one that I wouldn't give up for anything. And I just don't like the direction I feel some of this stuff is taking us. I'm just concerned about 10, 15, 20 years down the road where we might be heading with some of this potential regulation. I know this is just a study, but I'm just not comfortable with it.
Okay, thank you. Is there further discussion?
Nope.
Why don't we, so we're on the moving the dash 4 amendment to the bill?
That's fine.
So why don't we go ahead and have the clerk call the roll?
Clarification, this is for the dash 4.
Dash 4 okay. Amendment, yes, just moving that to the bill.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Hobie.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Oh, excused.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 3068 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 3068. As amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Wagner.
I will be a no on this as well. I think there's other things we could be doing. We've discussed our federal forest lands and issues there that we're facing with forest fires and the emissions that are caused from that. There's lots of other things that we should be taking charge of and taking the lead on and taking care of that cause a lot more emissions than what the wood stoves do. So I appreciate, hopefully we get a good report from these guys, so I appreciate all the work that Representative Johnson's done on this, and I hope that they take his leadership and put the right people on this committee, because you get in rural Oregon, lots of people, that's all they have for heat is that wood stove. So we need to take that into consideration, but I will be a no on this bill, so.
Thank you. A discussion?
Agreed.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
No.
Representative Helm.
He excused.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. All right, the motion passes. Representative Johnson, would you like to carry this?
Sure, thank
you. All right. All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3068 and open a work session on House Bill 2187, Ocean Energy Transmission. This was a public hearing that we held on April 7th, and there is a -3 amendment. Beth, do you want to give us a description of that amendment?
Madam Chair, members, the -3 would again replace the measure. It would express the policy position of the state that regional transmission planning processes conducted for regions that are wholly or partly encompassing areas of the state must adequately consider the transmission of electricity from ocean renewable energy generated in the territorial sea. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Mm-hmm. You want
to go ahead? Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4-6-15.
Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4-6-15. Is there any discussion? Representative Boone.
I'd just like to say that, you know, there is no opposition to this. There are some questions and everything. And this morning in our Coastal Caucus, we discussed another project that's going forward, we hope, an offshore wind project. And that's one of the things that's, you know, that they will eventually be affected by this, and they were fine with this too. So want to thank everybody out there, and I'd hate to try to name names on people who helped with this, but a couple of unexpected positive testimony when we heard the bill too, and a lot of work by OWET, the Oregon Wave Energy Trust. So I'm happy.
Good.
Just vote yes.
Is there further discussion? All right. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
For you, Representative Boone, aye.
Representative Helm.
Excused.
Here.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt or move House Bill 2187 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 2187 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Excused.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Aye. And seeing that, the motion passes, and we will send it to the floor.
Representative.
Okay, yeah, thank you. That's great. So I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2187, and let's keep going. Opening a work session on House Bill 2092. There was a public hearing on this from the Drive Oregon folks were here on April 2nd. There is -3 amendments to this. Would you, can you give us an explanation of those?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, 2092-3 would replace the $15 million cap that's in the introduced version of the bill with a blank. It removes the requirement that the director of the Department of Energy adopt rules to implement the tax credit program, revises the definition of battery-operated vehicle, directs the director to hire a contract with a third party to develop and implement a Charge Ahead Oregon program to achieve listed goals, and requires the director to submit reports on the program to the legislature. There is a fiscal statement on the bill, there's a revenue light statement, and there is a subsequent referral to the revenue committee.
Okay.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 3/30/2015.
Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 3/30/2015. Is there any discussion?
Madam Speaker, I'll be a yes on the amendments, but I'll be a no on the base bill.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion on the amendments?
Same.
Okay. All right. With that, why don't we go ahead? Is there any objection to moving the amendments? Okay. With that, the amendments are adopted. Representative?
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 2092 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Representative Reardon moves House Bill 2092 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. So we'll have a discussion on that. I do want to see this bill, you know, just from the policy point of trying to see what we can do with electric vehicles and making them more available to people in middle class and lower class by having a system where we're setting up a way to fund down payments and some of these other things that might be obstacles. There is a very limited amount of money that's available in terms of tax credits this session, which I think the proponents of this bill are very aware of, and how this will do in revenue. It's going to be up against every other tax credit, just like everything else. But you know, in terms of the policies that we have on a larger arena in the state with electric vehicles, this is something from a policy point that I would like to see move forward. Further discussion, Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be a no on this bill strictly because in a time where we're struggling to fully fund our education system in a proper full way, I just don't feel comfortable with however little or however much money may potentially go into these rebates or tax credits, however you want to define it. I think the electric car industry is there in a lot of cases. I think it's the electric smart car. It's $129 a month lease. It's pretty small, especially when you think about the fact. I tell a lot of people that work for me all the time. I say, man, buy one of these. You know, a used Nissan Leaf is as little as $10,000 with less than 30,000 miles on it, and they cost virtually nothing to drive. And so, I'm also concerned that it's going to potentially keep the balloon filled, inflate the market further and allow the electric car companies that are producing these to keep their prices possibly higher on the backs of our tax base. So, and then the final statement, we've got cars coming down the pike in less than 2 years that are going to have 200-mile ranges for $30,000 to $35,000 with no incentives. Attractive, high-performance cars. And so I feel like we're already there, and I just feel like there's probably, in the world of the EV market, I think there's probably better things we could do with this budget.
Okay, thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd?
No.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
No.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
No.
Representative Howell?
Oh, he's excused.
Mr.
You know what?
Johnson.
Hold on. We're gonna stand at ease for just a minute.
He's
going to be right here. Where's Helm? He's in land use. They're still finishing up the land use meeting. So we'll send it east for a minute.
You could have kept going. I was good with it.
We are back in action. Please continue with the roll call.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
What did you say? Aye, too.
I've thought about this carefully.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Johnson. No.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. With that, the motion passes, and we'll go ahead and move this to the Revenue Committee. All right. Let's go ahead and open the public hearing on House Bill 3344. Beth, can you provide the committee with a brief summary of the bill?
It's heartfelt.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3344-5 is in front of you. The Dash 5 amendment would replace the original measure. The bill would provide a tax credit for alternative energy devices that use solar radiation for domestic water heating and also for swimming pool heating. There is a revenue impact statement. I believe it's a light statement as well as a fiscal light statement on the Dash 5 amendment.
We're on Bill 3344?
3344, okay. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Representative Johnson.
Yes, Chair. This bill would simply extend some of the same tax credit opportunities to solar hot water heating as it does to solar photovoltaic. So one of the, as the market has shifted its attention to PV systems, has been a dramatic tail off in solar hot water heating installations. There are many of us who favored this. It's a very, very practical way for homeowners to decrease the cost of their energy. Solar hot water is easily accessible. The systems are quite simple to install. They can make a big difference in lowering energy bills across the state, and I think they would be really great and effective to have this tax credit purpose extended to this component of our economy and energy efficiency programs in Oregon. So I heartily support it, and I know Representative Reardon feels equally strong.
Yes.
Well, I've actually bought one of these systems in the early, probably about 1980-81, and it ran until I sold the house. It was on the house when I moved over 20 years after. So I think that speaks to the reliability of the systems, the simplicity of the systems. It took up less roof space than an equivalent PV system. So I think just putting it on an equal footing with PV makes a lot of sense, and it just gives people another choice on how they can take advantage of the sun.
One further point I would make is it does allow us to decrease perhaps a little bit of that thorny issue called net metering. This just simply creates hot water, doesn't make the meter run backwards, and lessens some of those issues that our utilities are having with that.
Plug and play.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. So we have Max Miller, who's going to be here to tell us a little more information. It's 3344, and there's a Dash 5 amendment, which is a gut and stuff in the bill. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. And my name is Max Muller. I'm a volunteer lobbyist with the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. CUB works to represent the interests of residential ratepayers working on telecommunications, natural gas, and electricity issues. I'm here to urge you to support House Bill 3344 with the Dash 5 amendment. The bill with the amendment is aimed at saving the solar water heater industry in Oregon. So first, what are solar water heaters? Unlike solar PV panels, which generate electricity, solar water heaters save electricity. And they do it by preheating the water, your municipal tap water, before it gets to your water heater. Heating water is so expensive, or is so energy intensive, and hot water is used in so many daily tasks like showering, washing dishes, washing clothes, that a solar water heater can save a family 15 to 25% on its home electricity bill. Solar water heaters are a really great way for homeowners to take advantage of the sun on their rooftops. The problem these days is that it's getting really hard in Oregon to find anyone who will install them. In fact, the once vibrant industry in Oregon that built, maintained, and installed these systems has largely been driven out of the marketplace. Now, it's been driven out of the marketplace not because solar hot water heaters can't compete on cost. In the Willamette Valley, a typical solar hot water heater installation might cost or might save 200 or 2,500 annual kilowatt hours of electricity. And at a cost of about $10,000. For about $10,000, you could install a solar PV system that would generate the same amount of electricity, about 2,500 annual kilowatt hours. So the same cost, the same amount of energy. What's killing the solar hot water heater industry is an outdated state clean energy incentive. And that incentive makes the final price that consumers pay out of pocket much higher for solar hot water heaters. For example, just given the example systems that I described just now, a homeowner would pay $3,065 out of pocket for the solar PV system, but $5,500 for the solar hot water system. That's 79% more for the solar hot water heater system, and that's due solely to the differing state incentives. Without cost-competitive solar hot water heaters as an option, the people who install solar hot water heaters on rooftops don't have a full suite of options at their disposal, and they can't make the most of the sun's energy on rooftops, on families' rooftops, if they have big families or small south-facing roof areas. Due to decreasing demand, the apprenticeship program that the state runs to train solar hot water heater installers hasn't had a new applicant in over 2 years. And whereas about 5 years ago, hundreds of solar hot water heaters were being installed each year, for the last 2 years, less than 50 have been installed. That's why CUB, my organization, is supporting this bill. The bill would raise Oregon's solar hot water heater incentive so that it roughly matches the solar PV incentive. The solar PV incentive is functioning well. It's doing its job. The Oregon Department of Energy annually evaluates whether it should adjust the solar PV incentive to reflect changing market conditions, and it's done so twice. And that the solar PV incentive is kind of right where it should be, accomplishing its policy goals. But the same is not true of the solar hot water incentive. So what this bill would do specifically is it would increase the renewable energy tax credit for solar hot water heaters from 60 cents, where it is now, to $2 per annual kilowatt hour of energy production. It would raise the limit on total incentive from $1,500 to $6,000, or half of system cost, whichever is lower. That's the exact same as the incentive is now for solar PV. It would increase the RETC for swimming pool water heaters just a little bit, from 15 to 20 cents per annual kilowatt hour of energy production, and cap it at $2,500, or cap half of system cost, whichever is lower. And it would also give the Department of Energy the authority to lower the incentives as market conditions warrant. The solar hot water heater incentive has not been amended since 1987, whereas ODO is every year evaluating whether it should amend the solar PV incentive. So this bill would give ODO the same authority to adjust the solar hot water heater incentive. If Oregon takes these steps, here's what we can expect to happen. We can expect that we'll see a gradual uptick in the number of solar hot water heaters installed again. We'll save a dying industry. We'll create green jobs. We'll preserve Oregonians' investments in the 25,000 solar hot water heaters that are already installed. And we'll do that by ensuring that there's market demand so that people are entering the training program and trained technicians exist to maintain these systems. And we'll also preserve a tried and proven mature technology that homeowners can use to take advantage of the sun's energy. So we vetted this bill with the Oregon Department of Energy, all stakeholders we could think of that would have an interest in it. There are no known opponents, and I encourage you to support it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Is there questions? Representative Holby.
Thank you. Looking at this whole issue around the solar hot water heaters, is totally support that, and the idea of this incentive, I suppose, is to help people pay for these sorts of systems. And so, but I'm wondering what Cub's point of view is on also extending this to the incentives for heating swimming pools and the, I guess, how that's really going to help, you know, the public in general in saving energy and affording these sorts of systems. And does Cub have a position on that in the Dash 5?
Chair Vega Peterson and Representative Holvey, I appreciate that question. It's a good one. From the Citizen Utility Board's perspective, a watt of electricity is a watt of electricity. And the more options we can give homeowners to save it, the better. Both the solar hot water heater and solar swimming pool incentives are very old. They haven't been adjusted in a long time, over a decade. And they're outdated. They're not performing their intent. The intent of all of the RETC renewable energy incentives is to give homeowners an option for displacing energy that would otherwise be imported from out of state. It's to boost renewable energy in this state. It's to drive market transformation. And the question to ask is, do the RETC incentives for these products, are they accomplishing their goals? We have them, but are they accomplishing their goals? And the answer for those two products is no. The swimming pool increase is a very small one, but we think it will provide the necessary increase to make that incentive perform as it's designed to do, to accomplish its policy goal.
Follow up?
So I assume, and what you're telling me is that the owners of swimming pools can't afford these energy-saving devices without this incentive.
Like I said, the question is, how are people choosing to meet their energy needs? And the policy of the state is to encourage the adoption of renewable energy technologies to incentivize people to adopt these technologies. And we've talked to people in the industry who install these systems, and they've told us that the incentive for pool heaters is just not enough. It's out of date. And by increasing it just a little bit, we can provide that extra nudge that causes people to choose these systems over alternatives. Like I said, a kilowatt of clean energy is a kilowatt of clean energy. It doesn't matter if it's being used to heat a swimming pool or heat the water you shower with. So we support it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Sam Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm curious, do you anticipate that this, if this bill passes, that we'll have just a trade-off? There would have been a PV, but now instead we have a hot water heater. Or will this increase the amount of demand upon the RETC device?
We don't see, Chair Vega Peterson and Representative Bentz, that's a good question as well. We don't see this competing with solar PV very much. For the most part, the same companies that install solar PV are installing solar hot water heaters. What's happening now is an installer will go to a person's house, and if the person is interested in, you know, rooftop solar, and they'll take a look at their roof, and they will make a recommendation for what configuration meets their energy need. Solar hot water heaters use a fourth of the roof space as solar PV panels, and so the optimum configuration is generally going to be first meet the water heating needs with solar hot water heaters, then maximize solar PV, filling up the rest of the available roof space. Without solar PV or solar hot water as a cost-competitive option, they're just skipping the solar hot water heaters, even though they're more space-efficient. And so they'll sometimes actually run out of room to install solar PV panels before they meet the energy, you know, they meet all of the energy needs of the home, or before they supply all of the solar energy that the homeowner may want. So it's really the same companies doing this work and installing these, but what we're doing is we're leveling the playing field to make it so all options are on the table, so they can give people the best configuration for their money.
Follow up, Madam Chair. So the The only, when I was looking at this 2 months ago for the first time, I tried to figure out what the proper baseline for measuring these two systems against each other was. And I finally came up with, I think, the cents per kilowatt hour of energy generated. And so I could compare the respective costs. Do you know what that is offhand? Because I, but anyway, I'm asking you.
Chair Vega Peterson and Representative Bentz, I'm not sure I understand the question. Can you say it again?
So, if I may, on the back page of this, it says increase the RETC for swimming pool heaters from 15 to 20 cents per annual kWh. So it looks like 15 to 20 cents is what this system costs, kWh. What I need to know what this amount for PV is per kWh, so I can understand at that level, no other measurements, just those two, where are we?
So I can explain, Chair Vega Peterson and Representative Bentz, I'd be happy to answer that question to the best of my ability. And if I'm not able to satisfy you, I'd suggest we bring up John Patterson with Mr. Sun Solar.
If I may, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote for the bill.
Okay.
My initial thought had been it didn't make much sense. And when measured on the kWh comparative basis. And I'm just asking to see if I was right 2 months ago in figuring this out. But I'm going to vote for the bill for other reasons.
Chair Vega Peterson and Representative Bentz, I think some of the confusion may be that the way the capacity of solar PV systems is measured is a different unit, typically, than the way the capacity of solar thermal systems are measured. The way the RETC for solar PV systems is awarded is by installed watt of capacity. And the way the RETC is awarded for solar thermal systems is by annual kilowatt hour of energy production. So one is a capacity-based measurement. The other is a energy output-based measurement. It is possible to convert one to the other. In order to do that, you need to account for the area where the system is installed. But if you take a system in the Willamette Valley as an example, in the Willamette Valley, a kilowatt of installed capacity equals about 1,080 annual kilowatt hours.
Please
follow up.
This is all interesting, but
yeah.
I've already decided how I'm going to vote. So perhaps offline you can give me the answer to the question.
Okay. I'm just trying to answer your question as I understand it, but I'll follow up with you to get you the information you need.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? I have a question. So, you know, this does have a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee because it does have to do with the tax credits. But in the discussions that you had with ODO, was there any discussion about how this might affect the amount of the tax credit for this?
Chair Vega Peterson, do you mean an estimate of the cost of the?
Yeah, the cost.
So we've done some back of the envelope calculations on that. And we would expect that if the market distortion caused by the differing incentives is fixed, we'd see a slow uptick over time in the number of solar hot water heater installations. We won't see an immediate rebound back to the levels, you know, in 2008 and before when there were hundreds being installed a year because the industry lacks capacity now. It would take time for the industry to rebuild. But so say this year, last year, 2013, that tax year, there were about 50 solar hot water heaters installed. In 2014, it's more around 40. A lot of the companies are projecting they'll install none this year. Imagine that ticking back up at a relatively the same rate. You know, the amount would maybe we've calculated be maybe $200,000 or less next year, $350,000 or less the following year. And we don't anticipate it, based on historic levels, ever exceeding $900,000 a year. But it would take, I think, the revenue estimate to really be sure of that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Don't say any other questions, so thank you so much. And I'm going to call up John Patterson, Brent Gunderson, and Kate Newhall.
Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee, I'm John Patterson. My address is 326 Southwest Pendleton Street in Portland, and I'm the owner of Mr. Sun Solar Company, also of Portland. I'm here today in support of House Bill 3344, Amendment 5. Solar water heating used to be a thriving industry in Oregon back in 1980 when I started Mr. Sun. There was the only hot water technology available then. I surveyed available solar water heaters and found in those days that a lot of them had reliability problems with freezing in the winter and overheating in the summer. So with the backing of the Oregon Department of Energy, I invented my own system called the Solar Reliance System, which was designed for Oregon's climate. It never froze. It worked on the hottest day of the year, the coldest day of the year, and never required service. While I eventually sold Mr. Sun Solar to Neil Kelly Company, I still own Solar Reliant and have a manufacturing interest in the state. My Solar Reliant system proved popular, so I invested in equipment such as multi-headed drilling machines to amplify the production capacity. I had 10 full-time employees, including a full-time engineer, to design and oversee my solar water heating manufacturing process, 4 people to manufacture them, and a full-time installation crew. At the solar water heater industry's peak in 2008, Solar Reliant was one of the most popular systems installed in Oregon, and I was shipping out of state to customers in New York, Pennsylvania, Florida, Alabama, and California. Mr. Sun was far from the only solar water heating company. As of 2008, at least 20 other solar water heating contractors and manufacturers were in the state, including 5 in Portland, 4 in Eugene, 3 in Bend, and a half a dozen others in Hood River, Pendleton, Roseburg, Grants Pass, Medford, and Ashland. All told, over 20,000 solar water heaters have been installed in Oregon since 1980. Solar electric systems, photovoltaic systems, also called PV, first came into the market about 2005. Since then, roughly 13,000 solar PV systems have been installed in Oregon. In 2008, my company, Mr. Sun, was doing roughly half and half, solar hot water and PV. All that ended because of unequal state-level clean energy incentives, resulting in a net cost of solar water heaters being much less than that of PV. In the summer of 2014, I was in the home of Jack and Adele Thompson, a North Portland couple who had received a bid for solar water heater 2 years prior from me, and they were now ready to go ahead. They had heard the cost of solar had gone down. I informed them that the solar PV costs had gone down, but solar hot water had not. I explained that low-cost PV modules from China had driven down the price globally, but that nothing equivalent had happened with solar water heaters. In fact, the price of copper for solar water heaters had gone up dramatically in recent years. They concluded maybe they should look at PV instead. I gave them a bid for a PV system that would have delivered the same 2,500 kilowatt hours per year as the solar water heater. The price happened to be the same, too, at $10,000. That remains true to this day in the marketplace. You can get the same energy from the same investment, whether it's hot water or PV. But in their case, after all the incentives were applied, this net cost of the solar water heater was $5,000, and the cost of the PV system was $2,500. Why is this, they ask? And I told them it's just the way the incentives work. However, it turned out that they did not have enough south-facing roof for a PV system that would deliver the same energy as the solar water heater. So the PV system would have taken 200 square feet, whereas the solar water heater would have taken 56. That's when they threw up their hands and said, wait a minute, you're telling us that solar water heater is more efficient because it takes up less space to deliver the same energy, and yet it costs twice as much? That's just not right. And I agreed. That's when I got the idea. The cost difference between solar water heater and PV is due solely to the differing state incentives. My installs this year will be in single digits, whereas in the 80s and 90s, they were in the hundreds. Due to decreasing in demand, I furloughed my manufacturing machinery and laid off manufacturing staff and installation crew. The cost difference wasn't just hurting sales of my Solar Reliant system, it was killing Oregon's entire solar water heating industry. The number of statewide installs has gone down steadily since 2008, from hundreds per year to less than 50. There have been no new applications for apprentices in the Solar Water Heating Apprenticeship Program. I sit on that apprenticeship board. Without trained technicians to maintain systems, the 20,000-plus solar water heating systems already installed are in danger of having no one maintain them. By equalizing the incentives for solar hot water to roughly match that of PV, we should see a gradual increase in the number of solar water heater installations over time as the industry rebuilds. If the industry can thrive in Oregon again, I have potential dealers in Pendleton, LeGrand, other parts of the state, as well as dealers in Washington, Idaho, and California. But it takes the Oregon market to drive the business and keep the doors open. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brent Gunderson. I'm the president of GenCon, Inc., Portland-based solar contractor. I live in Multnomah County. I've been in the solar industry since 1981, one day after John got into business. I have an STL license, as John does, which is the solar thermal license issued by the Building Codes Division. Last year in 2014, I didn't install one residential solar thermal system. The phones didn't ring, and the message is out, go PV, and we know the opportunities are there for both systems for lots of customers. Sometimes PV is too shady in some parts of the roof, and shade is not friendly to PV, so solar thermal can be used. So basically, what I have seen is that the institutional knowledge that we've gained over the past three decades is slowly slipping away. The industry is stalled, and so when people like myself, as we get older, we retire, some of us pass away, and that knowledge is gone, and the new guys aren't coming in because there's no signal for them to get into the industry. The beginning wage of an STL apprentice is about $22 an hour. Get up to $45 when you have your license, run your own business. So paying taxes, I know I paid my checks yesterday, two of them, got in the mail on time. So these are things that, great opportunity and possibilities, but I've been watching them slip away. And so this bill was crafted to try to adjust that and kind of bring it up to date. And hopefully the fiscal impact is not too great. But I think the benefits are well worth it to meet the goals of the state of Oregon. And I'll answer any questions later. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall, and I'm here today representing the Plumbing Mechanical Contractors Association and the Plumbers Steam Fitters Local 290. And I will say the beauty of testifying last is that everybody has said everything before that you need to say. So I will just concur with everything that has been said before me. And obviously, as you've heard, the differing incentives has caused the number of solar hot water installations to plummet. We believe House Bill 3344 will help save the solar hot water industry and will also help us save energy and create jobs in Oregon. I think those are two things that everybody can agree needs to happen here. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? No, thank you all very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on this bill? Please come forward. Hi, thank you. Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Thank you. I'm Dale Feek from Forest Grove, Chair Peterson and other members of the committee. I didn't plan to testify for this bill. I came up for the bill I didn't get to testify on Tuesday, but realized I'm not going to be able to testify today either. John Patterson, Mr. Sun Solar, installed hot water solar panels on a roof in 2008. He did an assessment of whether he assessed our need and decided the hot water was the best thing we could do. 2 years later, we installed photovoltaic. Again, John Patterson's company did that. And we did that because we wanted to decrease our carbon footprint, even though in Forest Grove we have 6 cents per kilowatt hour. And it's really not too cost effective, but we wanted to cut down on our carbon footprint. It's much more efficient to put hot water on your roof than it is photovoltaic, depending upon the cost of energy in your area. So I would highly encourage you to pass this bill so that hot water solar heating is a viable option for people to reduce their carbon footprint. It's very important.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Well, did you have a question?
Well, just a comment. We're focusing on solar hot water, which is true, but it's possible. I've seen it the technology used not only to provide for domestic hot water, but to put into in-floor heating systems with a circulating pump and so forth in the construction trade. There's ways to, if you have the hot water, you can use this in a lot of capacity. So again, making this available, I think, can open up a lot of opportunities for customers, for home builders, for folks that are designing new homes to have another option to put into their living spaces. They're thinking about how they want to build their home. So I thoroughly support it.
Thank you so much, Representative Johnson. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3344 and open a work session on House Bill 3344.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the -5 amendments dated 4/10/2015.
Rep. Johnson moves to adopt the -5 amendments dated 4/10/2015. Is there any discussion? Right. Is there further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Holby.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I really support the bill. I just have reservations about whether people need tax credits to heat their swimming pools. I kind of feel like those tax credits would be better spent on people who have trouble paying their hot water heating bills to start with. So I may be voting against this amendment and against the bill right now. My mind may be changed at a future date and when this bill comes back to the floor, perhaps, because I really do support, the hot water heating portion of this. So that's my statement.
Thank you, Rep. Holby. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to vote for the bill in this committee. I'm reserving my vote, of course, in revenue for a future day.
As we all do.
Yes,
thank you, Representative Benz. Representative Whitener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is an issue if you truly are concerned about green power and everything. It doesn't matter what we're heating or cooling or how it works. I mean, if someone's got a swimming pool or hot water heater or a large device that they're having to heat of water, this is a very good incentive for getting companies or someone who has the money to have a pool to actually heat it with this rather than using electricity and take them off the grid. So something to think about when you're voting on this and everything. I'm probably will vote for the amendment and everything. I'm not sure if I'll vote for the full bill, though.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Volby.
No.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 3344 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And then it will be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Rep. Johnson moves House Bill 3344 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Revenue. Is there discussion? Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Moby.
No.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Revenue. We go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 3344. Yes.
Madam Chair, I move to suspend the rules and allow Rep. Helm to vote on HJM 19, House Bill 3329, House Bill 3068, and House Bill 2187.
Thank you. Rep. Johnson moves to suspend the rules to allow Representative Helm to vote on four bills that we voted on. Any objection? Seeing none.
Hand signal.
Can you open the... Can we allow him to vote on those? Should I... What do I do? Open a work session on each one? Or?
Yeah, you can do that. Just
do one by one.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and... Can you ask him?
Just call him out and I'll vote.
Yeah.
Representative Helm.
Which bill?
Which bill? Well, I'll go ahead and open the work session on HJM 19.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Okay, we'll close the work session on HJM 19 and reopen one on 3329.
Representative
Helm. Aye.
All right. Thank you. We will close the work session on House Bill 3329 and open one on House Bill 3068.
Representative
Helm. Aye. Okay. Close that work session on 3068 and open one on 2187.
Representative
Helm.
Aye.
All right. House Bill 2187 is the work session on that is closed. Thank you.
Thank
very
you, Madam
much.
Chair.
You're welcome. All right. Let's go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3522. And Beth, is Palmer in here?
He was sitting over here.
Yeah, I think there he is. Okay. Beth, while Palmer is coming down, can you please give us a description of this bill?
Oh, this one. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3522 has a -1 amendment. The bill would authorize the Environmental Quality Commission not more than once each calendar year to increase water quality permit fees. The -1 would modify this limitation to increase fees above specified limits to unless the larger increase is provided for in the department's legislatively approved budget. There's no revenue impact. There is a fiscal statement. And it's been requested that the bill be referred to Ways and Means.
All right. Thank you very much, Beth. Hi. Welcome. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I have here with me Karen Tarno. She's a senior policy analyst at the department. Karen's here to answer any technical questions or maybe about the bill. We are here to talk about House Bill 3522 and the -1 amendment. We are urging the committee to support the bill along with the -1 amendment. House Bill 3522 would make clear that annual fee increases for water quality permits can be greater than 3%, but only if the legislature approves that increase in the department's budget bill. There have been years when the annual fee increases for our water quality permitting program, have been 3% or less. The statute allows the Environmental Quality Commission to adopt those fee increases. There have also been years when the legislature approved a larger fee increase because the annual program costs were greater. So why is House Bill 3522 needed? First, the bill, with the addition of the -1 amendment, reconciles the existing statute with prior legislative budget decisions. Second, the bill removes any confusion over whether the department can increase annual fees for water quality permits beyond 3%. But I want to be clear about something. If the department proposes a 3% annual increase in water quality fee permits, we can only do so if the legislature has allowed it in our budget. So thank you for your time and consideration. I will gladly take any questions.
Okay, thank you. She's just here to answer questions. Okay. Do we have any questions for Representative Benz?
Madam Chair, I was looking at the fiscal impact statement, and it says the change is necessary to accommodate fee increases and will generate approximately $724,000. Is it right? Is my understanding correct? This bill, where does this bill go next? Does it go to
Ways
and
Means? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That was my first question. Here's my second, if I may, Madam Chair. I think, Palmer, when we were discussing this yesterday, we were talking about how the 3% works in the budget, in the context of the budget. And has there been a year since that happened where the agency has not utilized the 3% increase?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative Benz, yes.
Can you please state your name for the record, please?
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Karen Tarno, Department of Environmental Quality. We obtained the authority to do the 3% increase in 2005. There have been at least one, I think maybe two. Well, we actually started implementing in 2007. There have been one or two years since then that I believe we did not adopt an increase. What we do is we look at the cost of the program and other factors. And I do know that during the time of the recession, we, in consultation with our stakeholders, were lax to reluctant to impart a fee at that point in time.
If I can add, if you look at those years from 2005 going forward, most of the time we either had no fee increase or a fee increase that was 3% or less. I think there's only been a couple of years where we had a fee increase, an annual fee increase that was greater than 3%.
Follow up.
The question, I suppose, is why the additional $723,000, if I have that right?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Benz.
Excuse me, I've said that wrong.
Oh, okay, yes.
I'm assuming that that's in addition to or on top of the 3%.
Mm-hmm.
And so perhaps you can tell us how much the 3% is and then how much more this is on top of it.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Benz. We are proposing through our budget a 12% fee increase. This 12% fee increase would be the only increase we enact in during this biennium. If we're not, if that package does not pass, we may consider a 3% increase in 1 year and up to 3% increase in a second year. Does that help answer your question?
Follow up. So Iris is trying to get out the actual number. How much in dollars is the question?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, we have a shortfall of about $1.2 million in the wastewater permitting program that we are proposing to address through a policy package that's a combination of fees and general fund.
And this is now to the point, the follow-up, thank you. The question is, what do we need that additional money for? That 1 point, am I correct in understanding that the 1.2 includes the 700,000, or is so the 700,000 is part of the 1.2?
Sure.
And that money is necessary for?
Yes, sir. Madam Chair, Representative Benz, there actually are two policy packages that are both being paid for by this combination of general fund and other fund. One policy package would enable us to obtain a new permit management system, procuring an off-the-shelf permit data management system to replace the one that we have that is essentially obsolete right now. And then there are also six FTE that we would be restoring with this position, six FTE in our wastewater permitting program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? I have one. What happens if this isn't approved? Like if you don't get the increase? Because what I understand is the governor's proposed budget already includes this amount in order to meet the headcount needs that you've asked for in the budget. So this is just to make sure that we actually have the authority to give you that headcount. But what happens if we don't? If that isn't approved?
Madam Chair, if this...
To clarify, what's the impact of that?
Sure. Madam Chair, if we're not able to apply this fee increase, but if for some reason we are still awarded the general fund request, we would probably be able to afford the permit management system and perhaps three of the six FTE. If we were not... did not get approval for any part of those packages, we would lose six FTE. We would have to leave probably some positions unfunded in order to pay for the permit management system, because that's a must do. So we have to get that work done in the next couple of years.
Okay. And what's the impact for the people that you're working with who are applying for these permits?
Sure. Madam Chair, there's about the six FTE represent roughly 8 to 10% of the staff in that program, in our permitting program. The positions that are at risk right now represent a variety of duties, from policy analysts to administrative to compliance and oversight. We tried to do the best we can to minimize any reduction to our permit writing staff, because you may be aware that we have a challenge there. So it might slow down our permit writing a little bit. It could certainly hinder us from making some of the program improvements we're hoping to make, and also cut into some of our compliance and oversight work and technical assistance we provide.
Representative Rudin.
Thank you for being here today. I'm really happy to hear that you're going to upgrade your computer systems, no matter what. So sounds to be a statewide issue. Could you clarify for me, are these new positions we're talking about or replacing, continuing existing positions? What's the balance here? And then also, you want to follow up later?
Go, yes. All whatever's right. easier. Go ahead.
Go ahead with that question.
Sure, Madam Chair. Representative Reardon, there are six FTE, that's actually seven positions, that would be restored through this package, and one new position that is involved with the work on the permit management system.
Okay, so it's
follow up.
Oh, follow up. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So I think we've actually had this question asked, but I want to just clarification. Are you facing a backlog of work right now? Could you quantify that just a little bit?
I certainly could, Madam Chair, Representative Reardon. At the end of 2014, we had of our wastewater discharge permits, there are about 8,300 permits that we have, and we were about 47% of them were backlogged. That means 47% of them have they're still in effect, but they have not been renewed on the 5-year schedule on which they should be renewed.
Follow up.
Last question. Does that affect water quality or ability to conduct a person's business or both? Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, it does affect water quality if we're not able to update permits that need limits, changes to the permits to be protective of water quality. It hopefully does not affect new businesses. We prioritize permits for new applications for permits that come in the door. I have to admit, though, there's particularly some municipalities that are looking at what are their needs for the future and their capital improvement needs and planning for the future and what are their permit requirements going to be. And some of our, it's a challenging place for them to be when we aren't able to give them the precise numbers that they're going to have to hit with their permit, which, it's information they need to have as they're thinking about how do they do their capital improvement.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, you helped me in the beginning of your testimony because it sounded like you have a plan if we don't approve this just for a reallocation of staff to take care of these needs. So is that correct? That there is a plan there for reallocation to put people in place to make sure these permits are getting issued the way they should be?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Wagner, the six FTE from the permitting program, those positions would be eliminated. So we would have to spread thin to get the work done. We'd have that much less workforce to get the work done. So I'm not sure that we could reallocate. We would just have more work
like
for fewer people.
May I follow up?
Follow up.
You were going to lay off in administrative staff, it sounded like, and some of, if I was hearing you correctly, and you would go to three more for the permitting process.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, there are, of those six FTE, it is a full range from administrative staff to mid-level technical staff to senior-level policy development staff. So if we were able to get the general fund part of the request and able to keep three of those positions, honestly, we haven't gone through that thought process to determine which ones we would keep at this point in time, so I'm not exactly sure how that would impact our program.
Did you have anything to add? Okay.
Sure.
Representative Benson.
Forgive me for not asking this earlier. The way I understand this, I'm going to guess at why the 3% came into play, because of course it's a 3% on existing permits, so that people who have them have some understanding of what they might get hit with mm-hmm. in the forthcoming years when they get the bill for the review of their existing permit. And so the statute includes this heads up for people. And then what you're asking now is that we say that on occasion they're going to get a surprise because we legislatively are going to give you more in the budget so they can raise their that we at the state level can raise what they're going to pay over and above the 3%. Mm-hmm. Have I captured this correctly?
Sir, Madam Chair, Representative Benz, yes, you have. This 3% came about back in 2005 as a recommendation from an advisory committee that had several objectives. One of them was to try to smooth out the fee increases so our permittees would not get hit by big, huge increases. So the 3% is intended to try to keep us up with the cost increases. It's not, and we knew it at that point in time. We knew that that would not suffice to keep up with the cost of the program. So we anticipated that there would be needs from time to time for a larger increase.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Palmer, one of the commonalities we're seeing this session with multiple agencies and budgets is just the difficulty that agencies are having in coping with the roll-up costs, biennium over biennium, i.e. meeting employee salaries and benefits and so forth, that make it create a need for additional support, but also make it more difficult for them to provide the same kind of product they've been providing in the past. What role, if any, does that play in DEQ's need for what you're asking in this bill?
So, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, or Vice Chair Johnson, excuse me. It's a very fair question, and a lot of these costs are driven by personnel-related costs, and it is a state government-wide issue. So we're not immune from that, and that is what's driven a lot of this. The good news has been, if you look at the data since 2005, we've been largely able to avoid fee increases that were greater than 3%, and in some years not any fee increase at all. But as Karen said, there have been years where we had to exceed that 3%, and you know, there is no intent in that situation to surprise anybody, but in order to pay for the costs that we have, including those personnel costs, it is necessary to catch the program up and have those larger fee increases. So again, the bill in the Dash 1 amendment is just simply to clarify that the existing statute doesn't prohibit or doesn't cause any confusion over a subsequent legislative action in the budget.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Representative Johnson kind of hit on a key issue. I'm just kind of curious which roll-up costs are hitting you worse. Is it health care? Is it PERS combination?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Weiner, I don't think we know. We can try to get you that information, but I don't know here today.
Thank you. Any further questions for this panel? Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hear you focusing on this one particular spot in DEQ, but is there other parts of the agency that you could possibly trim fat to help free up the funding necessary to assist in this without the additional beyond 3%?
Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, DEQ is an agency that has a number of programs, and the way we're budgeted is we have about 50 sub-programs, and most of those are largely supported by fees, and those fees are restricted in the purpose for which they can be used, so there's not really much ability to move money from one sub-program to the next. We don't really have that much latitude. The funds are not that fungible. General fund would be a different situation where the money would be more fungible, and the water quality program is the program in DEQ that tends to have more general fund. But quite frankly, we've had a number of cuts in general fund, particularly in the water quality program. It's taken some of the greater impacts. And so I'm not sure that we really have that much ability to move money around to the permitting program and without significantly shortchanging other water quality responsibilities.
Okay. Representative Verdon.
Could you talk a little bit about the balance of
money is coming, what comes from general fund, how much comes from fees, what the goal is, and how we're reaching the goal.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, I assume your question is speaking agency-wide.
Yeah.
So we, in rough numbers, if you look at DEQ's budgeting, we're about 70% fee-funded, roughly speaking, and we're about, I think around 10% or 12% in general fund. And it's maybe a little bit more federal fund that is the way the agency's funded. You know, we use the general fund to support a lot of work that isn't related to a particular regulatory activity, although in the case of the water quality permitting program, it does supplements what the fee payers provide. The fee payers provide about 60% of the dollars to support the permitting program, and the other 40% is general fund and federal funds. Excuse me. Thank you. So that's typically how we pay for our programs. I don't know if that really answered your question.
That's what I was looking for. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you both. Oh.
Is this permanent? If we pass something like this.
Yes.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Hurd, just to clarify, so what would be permanent is if the Dash 1 amendment is adopted to the bill and the bill goes forward, there would be permanent in statute that if DEQ had legislative approval in our budget, that we could have a fee increase greater than 3% for the water quality permitting program. That's the policy issue that this bill and the amendment speaks to. Whether we would get, you know, any increase or not, you know, I can't just say that depends on the budget process.
Okay.
That's why it's going to have go down to Ways and Means, so then they can talk about what the actual amount would be. Okay. Representative Holby.
Thanks, and just, you know, to reiterate or clarify that this does have to be legislative approved when there's an increase, and, you know, it would occur to me that some of the drivers of this could be changing amounts of federal funds that may come in for water quality, depending on what the federal how the federal government mm-hmm. reviews Oregon's compliance with the Clean Water Act or the source of pollution in our coastal water zones, things like that.
That's right.
And so, not being able to really predict whether those funds will be impacted, this would allow the legislature to react to some of those changes.
Sure, Madam Chair, Representative Holby, the 319 money that you're talking about actually would not be used to help fund the permitting program. There is a separate stream of grant monies from the federal government that has been actually fairly steady for the permitting program for the states. It doesn't keep up with inflation, though. It has no inflationary trigger in it, so it's always buys less than it did the last biennium.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, sorry about that. Representative Benz.
Thank you. I was trying to figure out what the 3% was. Mm-hmm. So how much is the 3% this year? I'm trying to get at the bigger budget. It's 3% of something. You can increase some number by 3%. What is that number? When I ran it a few seconds ago, it was pretty big.
Oh, gosh. Madam Chair, Representative Benz, I don't have that number off the top of my head. Sorry, I'll have to get back to you on that. Our permitting program budget is what you're asking?
Yes, and if I may, Madam Chair. The idea here is that if you are one of those, how many thousands of permit holders?
Oh, okay.
It was thousands, wasn't it? It wasn't like 8,300 folks.
Sure.
You're each paying a fee each year, and you're going to get a 3% increase, and you're planning on it. And the entire program of folks going out and checking on those who enjoy those permits is operating upon the foundation amount increased by 3% each year, 6% of biennium compounded because it stacks on top of itself. And so then we come in and we say, well, whatever that number is not enough. That's why I was trying to get that number. So we need to go to Ways and Means and ask for an additional sum over and above that which we were promising these permit holders they could enjoy. If we're going to say surprise, it's not enough. What I was trying to get at here is, what is that amount that's not enough? Because when I ran the numbers, it was a really big number, and I just would like to know where it is.
Maybe, Madam Chair, Representative Betts, maybe I'm hearing the question this time. The 12% fee increase includes includes the 6% that we might otherwise have implemented during this biennium. So we might, without our budget, without this package of the budget, we might implement a 3% this year and a 3% next year. 12% assumes that, you know, we essentially do that, and 6% more.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Follow up.
The question was, of what? 6% of what? Is it 6%? When I ran the numbers a minute ago, they were really big. But I asked earlier, what's the, is the $700,000 stack on top of the 6%? The answer was yes. I said, how much? $1.2 million. If I subtract $700,000 from that, it's $500,000. Is that 3%? Because that's a big number. If $500,000 is 3%, that's like $45 million. I'm going, wow, that's an awfully big number. Mm-hmm. Is that the number we're talking about getting 3% of?
I'm sure, Representative Benz, I'm not good at math on the spot. I think the question you want the answer to is our fee revenue, right, for the wastewater premium program. So that's a portion that's 60% of the cost of the program. So I don't have those numbers.
Further questions? All right. Thank you both very much. We don't have any.
I got late. I just came to the Environmental Quality Commission.
Okay. Go ahead and come forward for this bill. Thank you. And please reintroduce yourself for the record on this bill.
I'm Dale Feek, Madam Chair and committee members. I said I just came from the Environmental Quality Commission. Dick Peterson was there, and I've been going to those meetings since September of 2013. I've also been participating in the Blue Ribbon Water Committee that was appointed by the legislature, and I've been listening and giving public comment to that group. It was very interesting to me in listening to Commissioner Johnson tell Dick Peterson, Director Dick Peterson, why haven't the water permits been on schedule? Why are we the worst in the nation of getting water permits out? And one of the reasons is because the Blue Ribbon Committee didn't recommend an increase in funds. And that just blew me away as I sit in and give public comment. And so the Blue Ribbon Committee finally agreed to support a 3% or 2.9% increase in the budget for permits, because it was a double whammy. You got commissioner who was criticizing DEQ and the water department for not getting the permits out, and then another advisor group is not recommending the budget to fund the people to do the permits. It just didn't make any sense. And so if we are going to protect you, if we are going to protect the water quality, the toxicity levels in the water and the treatments, that DEQ has to have the staff to do the job. So I would hope that you would really support this budget increase so they can start to do their job. They can't do it without the money. So please consider giving them the boost to get the job done.
Okay, thank you so much. Are there any questions? No. Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3522.
Just a couple minutes.
I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2585. And colleagues, this was we had a public hearing on March 31st on this. It was one of several bills around electric vehicles that we heard this day. And there is a -1 amendment to this bill, and Beth, do you want to give a description of the amendment?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members, the dash one would clarify that if an owner of a lot owns the charging station, the owner must obtain liability insurance policy if the station is not hardwired into the electrical system and is not a certified electrical product.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And of all of the ones that we heard that day, this is the one that was the technical fix on some of the work that had been done on electric vehicles in a previous session. It clarified the ownership when EV charging stations were installed in planned communities or condominiums. It's clarifying ownership of the infrastructure. And the Dash 1 Amendment also makes sure that at the end of a lease or at the end of a sale that the infrastructure has to be taken, or the lot has to be taken back to its original condition.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 1 Amendments dated 2/2015.
Rep. Britton moves to adopt the Dash 1 Amendments dated 2/2015. Is there discussion? Representative Hurd.
Sorry if you, thank you, Madam Chair, if you mentioned and I didn't hear it. Sorry. Is this the bill, I know we're talking about the amendment, but is this the bill that mandates that a landlord must allow a charging station to be installed?
That was a different bill.
Okay.
That, no, that was a different bill.
It was?
Yes.
Madam Chair, could we take a 2-minute recess so the four of us can go out and talk about
this? Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Are we done discussing?
Did you find the information card? Yes, we did. Okay, good. All right. I'm calling us back to order. We are, as a reminder, we are under discussion of the Dash 1 Amendments. Is there further discussion on the Dash 1 Amendments? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Betts.
Aye.
Representative Cooney.
Aye.
Representative Weiner.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bearden.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes. Representative Bearden.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 2585 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Bearden moves House Bill 2585 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Weiner.
Madam Chair, I've been a no on these pretty commonly, matter of fact, most all the time. And to me, I think we're stepping on personal property rights at times with some of these bills, because an owner of an apartment or condominium could be against electric vehicles because he sees the damage that is being done to the environment by the mining of nickel, copper, different things that is used in batteries, and may want to say no to this. And now we're forcing him into this stuff. I see Chair Holvey agrees with me wholeheartedly over there. And I mean, the way these bills come across sometimes, you know, I feel like we're doing pet projects for Representative Barnhart at times, because a lot of them are being brought by him and he's driving them with his electric vehicle. And to me, this is not what we should be doing, and this should be done at, basically, property owner should make this decision on his own and put it in for his tenants himself, and it's something that he should do. So I will be a no vote on this.
Thank you. Any further discussion? I would just say that we've done a lot of policy around electric vehicles as a body, this legislature and previous legislators, and I think this is part of the move to try to see what we can do to help that. Okay, so any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Benson.
Aye.
Representative Bloom.
Aye.
Oh, wait, did we move it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. All right. Sorry.
Representative White.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Bearden.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The motion passes. So I will see if Rep. Barnhart wants to carry this bill, and if not, he doesn't, then I will be the carrier of this.
Okay, not Jim?
And I will, or Rep. White, no. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2585. Yes, that would be a wonderful thing. Okay. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 3522.
I thought we just did that.
Yes, we did.
3532?
We did the public hearing.
No,
we
oh, okay, got it. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It was the fee bill.
Yes. Oh, okay. Does he know that? Okay. Okay. All right. So, Representative Rudin.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4/7/2015.
Rep. Rudin moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated 4/7/2015. Is there discussion on the amendments?
3522, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
3522. That was the DEQ one that we just heard. And the Dash 1 amendments clarify that it's relating to the budget, allocation through the budget. Any further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Oh, I'm so sorry. We'll go ahead and have the clerk call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Holby.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
Aye.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Weiner.
Aye.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Reardon.
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson.
Aye. The amendments are adopted.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move House Bill 3522 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Rep. Rudin moves House Bill 3522 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Representative Whitener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be a no on this. Would have been nice to know what that number was when Representative Vince was trying to get at it, because we're looking at 6 full-time employees. That 3% increase may actually be enough money to cover everything that was there. I don't like doing things blindly and then actually just allowing basically a rate that's set in statute to be just raised automatically when you should be budgeting to what that rate increase is. You know what it's going to be every year. It's stable funding that they have, and they should work within the means of what they have in the water quality department. So I will be a no.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be a no as well. I just think that this another indicator that we've just got our costs of government, costs of doing business just continue to grow and escalate, and I will be a no.
Thank you. Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be of a no as well. I've been the board chair of a fire department where before I got there, they wanted to raise. People were recalled, kicked out. I came in there. Some other folks did. We worked hard to operate within the current standard that was there, and we found a way to make everything work just right. And so I like having some guidelines, some borders for people to operate within, just as Representative Weider and Johnson talked about. Keep things under control.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be supporting this. I think it's a good policy that will help reduce the backlog of these water quality permits, which is really an important thing we need to do in terms of projects, in terms of cities, in terms of governments being able to function in this realm of water quality, and is also just important to water quality. And I rest assured that this takes legislative approval, so the legislature is totally involved in overseeing these price increases if they decide to raise the fees, and monitoring the need for that. And so I think this is a prudent and a responsible way to make sure the state of Oregon gets the job done that needs to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be no also. Although I certainly understand the needs that were expressed, what I'm not familiar with is the means of achieving it. And the reason for the 3% is to provide permit holder certainty, and this language completely removes that certainty. So if it was for a 1 year or one biennium, perhaps I could struggle around to get to the point, but that would be an issue that would be discussed down in Ways and Means. Our job is to look at the language. Language is incorrect as far as I'm concerned because it's too broad and expands over too many years. And so I'll be no.
Okay, thank you. Representative
Bruden. I really like this. First of all, I'm very concerned about the huge backlog of work. And we're not really adding a lot of FTE. We're kind of making them whole. And this really recognizes that stuff happens. And when stuff happens, then I think DEQ needs to be able to come to us, the legislature, for additional funding. And that's all this is doing. So I think it makes a lot of sense.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hurd.
No.
Representative Holdy.
Aye.
Representative Benz.
No.
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Wagner.
No.
Representative Helm.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson.
No.
Vice Chair Bearden.
Aye.
Chair Megan Peterson.
Aye. With that, the motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. All right. I will announce that I am carrying over until Tuesday House Bill 2193 and House Bill 3070. I'm sorry, 3470. We have a lot of bills. If you guys have looked ahead and taken a look at the Tuesday agenda, we're going to try to be as efficient on Tuesday as we were today. Good job, everybody, even with some recesses. But we may be having to stay over a little bit depending on how things go on Tuesday. So just have that expectation. But thank you all for your work today. If there's nothing further, I'm going to go ahead and close the meeting of the House Energy and Environmental Committee.